My name is Trisha. I'm an alcoholic.
Inviting
me here. I have Kat to thank.
For
the 23rd, 2001 group is the Saturday 3 p.m. Bridge Fellowship. Big. Both of those things are key to my sobriety. Not only the last time I took a drug or a drink, how am I staying sober today? And that's through my home gram. I'm looking far back. About what happened, what it was. You know, I started drinking in high school. I was 15 when I started drink before then. Like alcohol, I liked a lot of it first, but I really started drinking when I was 15. Then about 6 months, I had my first blackout, and I was humiliated. Not because of what I did or what I said or what I do and don't remember, but because I lost time. I was happened that I was out in the world and I had no recollection of it. The way that I could really didn't want to. And so being the alcoholic that I was then, instead of not drinking, I figured out how to drink the way I wanted to because it prevented me from blacking out. I stole drugs. I took alcohol. I had to take to keep my addiction going. And I somehow managed to get through. It was in college. My sister and I went to a health, and there was a therapist there talking about sort of, I'm a double winner. I belong to both. And that therapist was starting to be a therapy child of alcoholics. Both my parents were family, and now I had a sister who was sober. And I started seeing this therapist, and quickly, it became apparent to her that I was in my own addiction.
We started talking about the way I drank, how I drank, when I drank, how I felt after I drank, all of that.
And it really started to show me that I was not happy with the way that I drank. I was not really particularly happy I was drinking, right? So if I was drinking, all bets were off. I was having a great time. But the next day, I was not having a great time. I worried about blacking, all these other things.
Anyway, it was in her office, first time out loud.
I think I'm an alcoholic. So that was my entry myself. That was a long ago.
I didn't know other young people at that time
that were also sober and a meeting. It was all these older people.
And I chose not to.
Right? I chose not to.
Anyway,
a couple years goes by and I'm living in Northampton. I'm out of school. I'm working. And now, mind you, I've been able to sort of have a sense in my life, you know, I got work. Like, I was really miserable in a lot of ways. And there were a ton of young women getting sober or were sober in AA for the first time. And I started going with a regular basis and got a sponsor and like did all the things my sponsor told me to do. To a meeting every day, because that's what she told me to do. She said, go to a meeting every day for 90 days. And you'll figure out what meetings you like and which ones you identify with it the most and figure it out from there. And after that, and I worked the program. But back to high school for just a moment. When school, my twin brother were in a car accident happened because of their night of drinking. and my twin brother was killed as a result of that car accident. So I had some grief that I didn't know how to deal with and hadn't dealt with yet at, you know, old and for suicidal stuff and get treatment and did that for 4 weeks. And that's when I, you know, came out at, really into the program and with my friends. A couple of years later, a breakup spun me into a spiral of grief, and I drank again. And so I won't bore you with that story either more times until this sobriety there in 2001. Through and someone that needs outside, so I get outside help when I need it. I see a therapist if that's what I need to do. But I also come to AA to know how to live. And today, I'm in a continue to live sober. And in my life, I've been able to put that together for, and it's really incredible. You know, the last, I would say, 10 years or so of my life, I'm living a lot of my wildest dreams. I truly, truly am. When I was a young person, I thought I really just didn't want to be on welfare. I grew up on welfare, and that was my goal. And that was the my goal.
Father was one of us. He made it. God rest his soul. Alcoholics Anonymous. Before he was in WW2, and when he came back, he passed. He was in WW2. Boy, when he came to AA, he was one of us. Family is rife with alcoholism. So, wisdom from the tree. And despite the fact that I've got not, it's in my genes. So, when I grew up in a small town in a rural area in California, a lot of like produce and shit is made. Well, the produce actually in San Joaquin Valley. And but I, you know, like I said, I didn't really fit in. And I remember constantly being trouble at school, stealing stuff, not keeping my hands to myself, starting fights, getting in fights, talking back, not listening, really rebellious and like obtuse in my behavior, like so I was told. And so I was prescribed decemprimine, dex, because I was diagnosed ADHD, you know, and I couldn't. Fucking my head was on. I could never keep my hands to myself. I was just in everybody's shit all the time. And so when I was medicated, right? And what that taught me was that, you know, figured out that I was an alcoholic. I was indeed different, right? And that I needed to take a substance inside my body empty so that I have some semblance of normalcy or at least fit in. And so when I found alcohol, I was like, yeah, this is a no-brainer. I'm putting it into my body for some semblance of normalcy. And I'll tell you what, when I get fucking blackout drunk, I feel normal. I feel good. Like that's my home is like swinging at the fences. You know what I mean? Like just going crazy, like fighting people, chasing people around with chainsaws and shotguns, whatever I can get my hands on, getting kicked out of parties, kicked out of houses. My disease progressed really rapidly, obviously. By the time I was 12 years old, when I got hospitalized, I got put in a mental hospital for 11 weeks. My parents pretty much just left. They were like, you need to, I don't know what's going on, but you just need to stay here. And they fucking lied to me. They were almost at all. I was like, yeah, I'm coming. I'm with you. And then we didn't go to McDonald's and I got left behind these locked doors and it was a bummer. But that was where I had my first sexual experience. So 12 years old in a mental hospital, you know, that's great. Then I got let out, vowed never to touch substances again, vowed amid that solemn oath, right? That we all wholeheartedly talk about alcoholism, making that solemn oath, like I am never, ever, my hand to God, going to do that again. Because I don't like to be told when to eat, sleep, and shit. You know, that's what happens when you get locked up. If you've never been locked up, that's what happens. So it's time to go to group. It's time to go to the bathroom. It's time to eat food. It's time to go to sleep. So I was like, never, I don't want that. 11 weeks of that was hell. But fast forward to a couple years later, I'm drinking. I'm still using, drinking, ripping. Been running, stealing, running around the neighborhood at night, hiding in bushes and hanging out with the wrong people, hated to the shitheads, and, you know, like, causing to go beat people up and stuff and be, what do they call those? A miscreant, right? And at first, it was like these cool, like, weird stoner kids, and we would drink 40s, and, like, I just remember, like, drinking, like, running away. And I go in some like black doll park and pounding 40s of King Cobra. And that was like a good time to me. And I was always watching other people and the rapidity or lack thereof of them finishing. And I would always ask them, like, are you done with that? Are you going to finish this up with that? And someone reminded me the other day, they're like, oh, I was the person on the party and like drink stuff that was left on table. And I was like, oh, my God, all the time. It didn't matter if it was a funeral, if it was, like, a grandma's funeral, if it was, like, somebody's, like, whatever. It didn't matter. Like, I would just fucking, oh, what's this? I would do that with pills, too. Like, if I was hanging out with people in their levels, I'd take one and go, what are we doing? What is this? What is this going to do? Like, I wouldn't even ask. I was like, fuck, you know. I didn't want to ask before. I just was, like, along for the ride, you know. Which is extremely reckless. Caution is not our strong suit. So then I ended up in the psych ward again. I got depressed. Alcohol is a depressant. And I ended up in the psych ward again, and I tried to kill myself that time. I OD'd on some pills. I had all the pills in the bottle, and I just drank them all and ended up coming out of a blackout in the hospital with a tube down my throat. And they were like, my grandfather sitting over me and he's crying. I'm like, why are you crying? I was like, oh, I'm hot. I couldn't really talk to that tube. Like, what's the matter with you, right? And he's like, I can't try to kill yourself. I don't know what's wrong with you. What did we ever do? I just wanted to get high. You know what I mean? I was like, I don't care. I just want to get high. When am I going to get out of here? Ended up back in the psych ward. Got out of the psych ward. I went to jail, like juvie, and then my mom was like, don't ever talk to me again. You're dead to me. I don't ever want to see you again. I'm not your mother. You're not my son. We're done. And like, just left me in the cell. And so my mother disowned me. I think I was like, I don't know, 13th. Maybe 15. But anyway, we didn't talk like well into my like 11th night. Like she straight up, like I was like disavowed. Like what do they call blacklisted by my mother? You know what I mean? And so that really fucking wrecked me. Like being a young kid, you know, and having your mother tell you that in jail. My biological father came and got me a relationship with, lived with him for the last year of my disease. My father's new wife hated my fucking guts. She was constantly just calling me a junkie fuck and like, you're a liar, get out of my house, blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't very long before I was kind of kicked out of the house, but I could live in the backyard in a tent. So, using every day, smoking at PCP, you know, ended up on the front lawn in my underwear, like, for days, like, huffing gas out of socks with, you know, people in the neighborhood. Like, I could get my hands on stealing whatever wasn't nailed down. And I could just be in a fucking miscreant. And I was depressed. I was legit depressed. And I remember that last year in my disease, wanting to die. Like, every fucking day, wishing I was dead, but being too chicken shit to do anything about it. And I would wake up crying because God hadn't taken me in my sleep. And I would go to bed at night sobbing, hoping God would take me in my fucking sleep. And, like, cursing, you know, cursing. God, fuck you. Like, so full of anger and resentment and, like, just darkness, man. Like, just darkness. Like, the bottom is where you stop digging. I wish I knew that then, right? It takes what it takes. And those were the darkest days of my entire life, my last year. Your music, blah, 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 and I get the bright idea, and I'm done, and my grandparents were always trying to get me to church, and so I went to church, but with the pastor, son, I got him to get me a bomb, and my big plan was to go out to the courthouse and just set it on my chest, go out with a poof, and so that was my thinking. My parents, my dad found it. I got fucking taken to the psychiatrist. Bomb squad came. The cops came. It was this big fucking dramatic thing. Alcoholics love drama. I'm like, ah! So, again, I'm in the psych ward again. Okay. My insurance runs out after I'm going. Going, well, you got to find a place to go. And this moment, this was my first step, right? So they're like, you got to find a place to go. My dad wasn't having anything. My mom wasn't having anything to do with me. My grandparents, aunts, and uncles weren't having anything to do with me. Any friends of the family I would call, they were like, go to Napa. Yo, you need to stay hospitalized. You're a danger to yourself. You're a danger to other people. But like, I was fucked, right? And they were like, well, I guess the best we can do is just remain and you in jail, like in juvie until you turn 18. Fuck. Oh, word. I guess that's that. And so I went to juvie, but I thought it was like, so, and this guy, I mean, my first step is that moment that I realized is that I would my life had become a man. To safety. No one would call me, would let me in there. I was legit, like, homeless, right? At that point, I realized that I had made it, right? Before you can admit something, you have to surrender to it. You have to acquiesce that you're fucked, right? And so I'm fucked. Like, this is fucked. I'm fucked. So I said, Julie, this dude can see me from San Francisco. And his, I can't remember his name. It always vexes every time I tell the story because I'm like, Jeff. Anyway, he was a for this therapeutic community that was based in San Francisco. And he said, smiling out, he's looking at me and he's really got like deadly earnestness, right? Like, very serious, but he's got a soft nature and he says, I read your file and life. And if you're willing to do, then you might have having a good life. He's, you know, times good life. And he said, but there are things that you cannot do if I take you back with anyone. Do you get your hands on people? I said, yes. Because at that moment, I realized higher power doing what for me what I cannot do for myself. Right? Like, God is doing for me what I can't do. Right? Somewhere in there, like, I knew that the jig was up and I just needed to do whatever this dude was going to ask me. Two, can you not get loaded anymore? And I was like, okay, I guess. I mean, it's my best friend. It's the best thing in my life. But if you're saying that that's off the table, I'll go with you, and I won't get low. Have sex with anybody in this program, sure, no problem. You can't have knowledge of anybody else doing these things. And if you do have knowledge, to call them out on it. I was like, okay, that seems like a rat, but okay, just get me the fuck out of jail. And the last one was stealing. And I was like, okay, yeah, I can do those things. I just get me out of here. So he took me back to treatment. He took me to treatment up in San Francisco. And it was called voyeuristic, hardcore, brutal attack therapy, like no fun, like $200. It was pick up a telephone. I couldn't touch it. I could not fucking leave the house with a caseload counselor. You know, like people watched everybody, like it was watching time. And any kind of called out in front of everyone. And so they would shout. And it was like horrendous. Like for me, that. Not to stay there for a whole ass year and a month, in treatment as a 17-year-old boy. Like, I needed that. A lot of people can't much, but that for myself, I needed to do that. And I would see, like, him out, like, in twos. You always had to have a buddy when it left the house because they were going to, like, watch you and you were going to watch them and they were like your sober buddy, right? So, well, real excited, real riled up, and then come back fucking eight lines of blow. Like, oh, you know, up and shit. Oh, I got a sponsor. Oh, you know, like, just going, what are these people doing, man? Are they really going to rid? What? That doesn't, like, is going to make you that happy. Level of jubilation is going to come. Like, that's weird. I was like that at first. I was like, I would sit in the back of the room and a character sat this person's lawn. Find out. Just stag thinking, right? Like, and my, of course, they tell you when you get into that place, it's like, your best thing you got you here. You better change your shit. You better take the cotton out of your fucking ears and put it in your mouth. It was like super hardcore. So I would go to these meetings and kind of like just like showing up, like bringing ass to the phone. Like, I heard that a lot. And it's true. These meetings, what you guys were talking about, not my idea. You want to die too. You blacked out. Oh, yeah. But, oh, okay. I never even had a license. I think there's a lot of shit by getting sober at 17. You know what I mean? Early on, like when you did, and I'm like, okay, well, that's cool for you, bro. You're dumb because you waited till you were 50 years old, dickhead. You know what I mean? Like, people trying to be weird, like, you know. But so I say that because if you're new and you feel like maybe you didn't do enough drinking or enough cause enough wreckage in your life, you are a man. You say you are. Period. For traditions is that the only requirement for men to stop drinking. You are one of us. That you becomes we, because that's the first word that's we. I come through the room. It's not about us. It's about we getting sober together, doing this, and moving one day at a time. And they call it trudging the road. What would have happened? So I went and got as far. I kept going. On a meeting, I picked the wildest motherfucker in the room. His name was Mad Crazy. He like, oh, Mad Crazy, right? But he listened to hardcore, and I was like, yeah, I love this. I love hardcore. We sponsored out, bro. I got you. Come to my house this time. He lived in. Come to my house this time. We're gonna meet on Saturdays and meet out of the book. And so, like, that's what we did. And he took me through the steps. God bless him. And so, like, 20 minutes. Thank you, NDK. saying yes to AA, saying yes to admit it, like waving the white flag of save the, what was the other thing they used to tell us all the time? Tom was like, so dad, I was like, that's and you come to restore me to sanity. I didn't come here to find God. They're like, you know, there's a up there that we have called Members Eye View, and in there it talks about like house that is different because each architect is to accommodate, this program will accommodate the rebel as well as the conformist. And as soon as I have to tell about being there, so that kind of reassured me, right? That anybody else believed, only that it wasn't me doing the show. Because up to that point, like, my record was not so good. You know, so coming to believe that a power greater than myself. So I had a pull because I was never saying I never had. I don't know what the fuck any of you, but I don't know what. And that's a miracle. That is a miracle of this program because, like, my life is pretty sad. I would say 97.97. You know, the other percent is when I'm experiencing road rage, right? Like, trying to, like, run the show on the road, right? Playing Larry Book and, you know, hey, you go. I want to be that guy in the middle of the road blowing the whistle. Like, you know. You know, I want to be that guy, you know. But not just on the road, like the whole rock. I want to be the director and the actor. My will and my life over the camera. God is in. Like, until I'm in pain. And that's what we have all anything until I'm painted into a corner. Gee whiz. What do we do now, Jerry? What do we do now? I got to wait until the footprints everywhere. Decision to turn my will and my life is not for me, like, guide my behavior. Will and life is thinking and behaviors. So, something I ask God, behavior, please guide my thinking, my behavior. I mean, it still works, right? But I remember back, like, 6 or 7 years ago, I was struggling with something, and I called a fellowship. When I, you know, that's what we do. And mental health professional and a member of all, and a close personal, give me some valuable. And that's what was going on. And they said, so real quick, you want to do a third step with me real quick on the phone? And I said, yeah, sure. The third step over and over, quick succession. She said, say it again. I said, okay, man, to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand it. She's also, I said, I did it again. She said, say it again. I did it again. She's like, now good fucking meeting. Ask me later. And I did, and it worked, right? So, like, whenever I ask God to direct my thinking and my behavior, it's like a, like, casting. And then myself. So real quick, what it's like is I write the cause, you know, the people I want to, you know, have a problem with, cause the resentment, what my part is character defect from my part, then the spiritual opposites. So I know what's 7. I got to meet God halfway, obviously, right? One more time. It's while God removes those defects of character. Then I share that with God being the exact nature of my wrongs. That's 5. So, you know, it's like, you know, we complicate shit. Like, we just like complicate stuff. People are like, go right at the left. What if squirrels are running rapidly? What if I do that? You know? So then entirely ready to have God remove all my defense. And that's why I saved my spiritual office. Meet God halfway in 6 and 7 to remove my shortcomings. Getting, I was like, what's a shortcoming? Like, what does that even mean? And my sponsor's like, have, like, having a shortcoming, like getting a smooth ride. I was like, oh yeah, it's like a half a person getting a person and expecting to have a whole relationship. Like the first day, like, you know, like, oh, this person, I'll fix you. And there's been a lot of that, right? Like, everybody's story is different. They've been removed from me. Very, like, we say they sometimes, after defects have been lingering out, motherfuckers. Like, and he needs, it's a lot. Like, one motivated by pain, so, like, I won't do anything about it. That behavior. And then making a list of all persons who with my mom disowning me, get to 8 and 9, my mom would be honest, because I was very clear about that I owe my mom. There's myriad things that I did my husband to disown me. And also, that's the thing we do, right thing in everyone's eyes, you're immediately like excommunicated, like you're dead, you're invisible, you don't exist anymore. And so that was a sick thing that happens in families. But I was returned to 8 and 9, and eventually year 13, around, I want to say between year 11, working the steps multiple times for my self-harm and my forgiveness that I was given as a gift, right, of Alcoholics Anonymous. So we got to hang ship again. My house, and I would rub her feet, and I'd let her listen to Terror. And she'd make me, I'd make her CDs with like Slayer and Hate Breed and Brutal Heart. Or that shit. Like, she was really into it. She's dead, she's gone. And I didn't have to drink. That there's myriad things that have happened in my sobriety that I have not had to drink behind. There's nothing that a drink won't make worse, right? In 10, I got to make amends with my mom before she died. Like, I got to spend a good whole 6 years of having a great relationship with this woman as a direct result of this program. It's what a gift, you know? A lot of people don't get to do that. You know what I mean? Like, I fucking feel so bad for people who guys, they have a resentment with their father or their mother, and they don't get to say that soul wound, right? Yeah, because in a very real way, I understand the resentment of my mother, right? Come being born, and when they die, that it's kind of like a rite of path. I am next, right? And so work begins. The spiritual, you know, entropy, like an object stays in motion until stop, and then it's my turn to go into the unknown. You get to, that's life on life. I meant for her to hold her hand, the place to take me when I was a little boy, hold her hand and make them like stare into her eyes and we, It was great. She was great. My life is great. I'm so grateful that I got to do that. And personal inventory when I'm wrong, properly admit it. I'm going to attend Steph Webby and what toilet paper. It was like, you know, like when you set your like day out, you're like, you just gotta do that. And then you have a thought that's like really like fear driven, like bullshit, but you just at 30, like extra second to like hang out in your brain. And then you know what happened? Yeah. Like wet blanket thrown with like tons of cobweb paper just around making you immobile. Damn, I wrote it all out. I resent blah, blah, a prayer of my choice. Got at the top of the page. Pick up the phone. Start calling motherfuckers. Just couldn't get. He picks up. I'm all, what are you doing? You that time of year? Your tensor goes. Bam. Brr. He's all, I'm naked. He was getting ready to go to work. But that's what we found is when we got a tensor, we got to dump some shit, deal with it, shred it. It's dealt. We felt better. Better. And that's what we do. That's what Steph, I'm taking all this garbage in here and putting up. Then you tell someone about it. Loses an observance of this action, it loses even more power, and then when you destroy the list, it loses all its power, right? And so, like, our secrets change, right? The secrets that we had then, that we put out on the paper, secrets we have now is we do nice shit for people, and we don't say anything about it, right? That's how we change it, like a life of service versus selfishness. And step through prayer and meditation is improve because we understood I'm praying only for knowledge of his will for us. On a daily basis, when I hit my knees, Ronnie, and older, so like 84, 85, and get back up sometimes. Age in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a hot topic. To get down on my knees sometimes. It's like, you know, it creaks and cracks. But and you start to like, the religion is your relationship with God, right? Because we're talking about God here in this house. He says, your connection to God isn't here. But then it's connect. And he says, so like, if you have not good, right? But then if you start to to explain the self's experience of reality, then you start to separate yourself from people and from things. Like you start like compiling your experience of what's happening and putting names and consolidating and power these things and making, you know, and stuff. I said, cutting away from being a part of the light, right? Like, join us on my spirit, right? You know, in our literature, like, well, close as I can get to God. Like, I am God. Like, that's saying that cut off. I am fucked. Again, I'm back where I was like, okay, I'll do it one good way. So, alcohol, right? I'll do whatever you want me to do more of that stuff. That's all. You know what I mean? So, like, I'm a thought. So, what next? I'm a permit. I keep working with Spizzy. Like, even after the war, I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, but it's good because it keeps me sober, right? You guys, to do anything that I've done. wouldn't be accountable. I call that because I needed to hear it. I actually never see that motherfucker in meetings. But